Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too. Like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Coming up on this episode of White Wine Question Time.
We want to just make sure that they feel happy. You know, when we go and visit safe houses, we're there to, like, cook dinner and play Uno, which we do, and listen to them sing or try and sing ourselves, which just never works out that well. But Augie is a 2.5-year-old firecracker and just is listens to me, really. I don't know why. And then Ernie, you know, he just smiles the whole time. So they're really easy and wonderful boys.
Did you know about the bond moment, or were you as surprised as us?
Nobody knew. It was amazing. We were all surprised. Nobody knows that. That's a real big nugget.
Hello and welcome to White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks its guests three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine. And my guest this week is a woman whose name you'll know, but the chances are you know very little about her and her work. She's the director at the London Contemporary Art Gallery, Houser & Worth. She's a wife, a mother of two, a daughter, a sister, and a campaigner. She's also 11th in line to the throne and is a princess. Her grandmother was the late Queen. Her uncle is King Charles. Her birth made headlines around the world in March 1990, with Buckingham Palace announcing her arrival as the second daughter of Prince Andrew and the Duchess of York, Sarah Ferguson. Raised as a member of arguably the most famous family on the planet, hers was, she says, a very happy childhood, and she remains incredibly close with her parents and her elder sister, Beatrice. After graduating from Newcastle University, she went on to work in the art world and spent time working at an auction house in New York before returning to London, where she's worked at Houser & Worth as a director for the last 8 years. As a 20-year-old, while skiing in Verbier, she met the man she would go on to marry at Windsor Chapel in 2018, Jack Brooksbank. And together, they're the parents of two young boys, August, who's two, and Ernest, who's just 5 months old. As well as working full-time and having a busy family life, she also makes time to support her family's wider work as well as her own causes, which has seen us step up to the mic in the last year as a podcaster. Her brilliant series, Floodlight, which she presents alongside her best friend and colleague, Julia de Boinville, unflinchingly and intelligently tells the story of modern-day slavery and the many guises it takes as it swallows up 50 million people around the world. Based on those stats, more people are currently living as slaves than at any other time in history. It's a global epidemic, and for the last 10 years, She and Julia have been campaigning via their charity, the Anti-Slavery Collective, to shine a light on those who are helping to expose the kind of modern-day slavery that many of us are, well, frankly, blind to. On their podcast, they interview lawmakers, a former prime minister, famous activists like Dame Emma Thompson, and most importantly, survivors. It's a fascinating and educating listen, and season two begins with an interview with the woman who introduced the Modern Slavery Act in 2015, former Prime Minister Theresa May. So let's hear more, shall we, and dial her in. It's Her Royal Highness, Princess Eugenie. How are you?
Hi, Kate. I'm so good. Thank you for having me. This is so exciting. I love being on a podcast. It's not my own as well.
You're quite the dab hand. I mean, in at the deep end, the Prime Minister, a former Prime Minister, Theresa May, and there you are unflappingly kind of guiding her through an hour of pretty heavyweight conversation.
Well, do you know what? She's actually one of the most generous people with her time and her thoughtfulness and her energy towards this subject. You know, she's a real, you know, fighting for anti-trafficking rights. And, you know, we got to her office, and you have to go into Parliament, like through where all the police are and the, you know, the bollards and lots of people. And then you get out and you have to walk under the tunnel, a tunnel of Parliament, and then you walk up some stairs and into her office, and you know, you see all the names of all the MPs on the walls, and you're like, oh gosh, here we are. And then you go in into this wonderful office which overlooks the square, and you have, you know, a wonderful cup of tea with the former Prime Minister, who's really remarkable, and what she's done for, you know, the putting really the Modern Slavery Act and making modern slavery sort of raising the awareness towards modern slavery in the UK and around the world is incredible. So I'm so excited that she's our first episode launching.
It, in so many ways, because I know that you've had, you can tell with the shorthand that you have with one another that, you know, you've been in her company before and that she's been very supportive of the work that you and Julia are doing. Was it a bit like sitting with the headmistress after you'd left school and her saying, oh, you've done so well?
Yeah, I'm not actually. She's much more gentle than that, in a way. Like, she's actually just it's so remarkable watching her work and her thought process and her level of attention to detail. You know, she works with us on our charity as a advisory board member, and she's so dedicated. I mean, she never misses a call. She turns up in person for us when she's got things launching and speaking in Parliament. And like, she's, you know, it's like being with a friend now. She's really, it's incredible.
You can really hear that. I think you've made a great job of humanising her after having to be the Prime Minister for so long, which really does involve you being, you know, on message the whole time. It was a really engaging listen about a subject that, I mean, crikey, what a mountain you're trying to climb here. I don't think any of us can truly comprehend what modern day slavery looks like until they start to wrap their ears around the shows that you've made, and you start to shine a light on the fact that, you know, we all live streets, moments away from somebody that is living as a slave.
Yeah.
And the many shapes and guises that takes.
We always say, I mean, we got a fact from someone a long time ago who said, you know, you're within a mile of someone enslaved. So where you live, you're within a mile of where they live. And I recently read a fact from the Water Free Foundation, which was one in every 150 people across the globe are enslaved. And that was such a sort of terrifying fact, because there are 50 million slaves, you know, in the world today. And in the UK, that's about 14,000. And, you know, I think with our podcast, like, what we wanted to do is we wanted to show people that, like, it is in every sector of society, but there is things that people can do, and there is hope. And, like, there are people that have been fighting against trafficking and for modern slavery for, you know, so many years. And actually, what we want to do is just sort of shine a light on that and make people have hope that they can do something too, and they can, you know, affect change by putting their mindset and their voice and wrapping their ears around it, as you say, and just educating themselves and not. I mean, that was what happened to us. We didn't know about it, and I didn't even know the term modern slavery. I didn't really, you know, it wasn't part of my everyday thinking. And now, obviously, it's something that we really educate ourselves on, and we're constantly talking about.
Because I don't think a lot of us know what a modern day slavery looks like. So, for example, you highlight it could be your local nail bar, it could be your local car wash. It's not just the extreme cases that you might see on the news or Newsnight about sex trafficking or people trafficking. It comes in many different shapes and guises. And once you start to look for it, it's actually quite frightening how evident it is, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's something that also we didn't want people to feel frustrated or frightened or like, oh gosh, we can't help this situation. You know, trafficking comes in many different forms. So as you say, it's not just people trafficking, sex trafficking. It's also forced labour or domestic servitude. So that's sort of an example I'd give someone is, you know, someone who's withheld passports from someone for, you know, don't give your passport back or work 23 hours a day or not the correct living conditions or, you know, forced labour is unfair wages, not being paid correctly. You know, that's a simple, very simple form for most people to understand that, you know, if you're exploited as a vulnerable person and you're not paid correctly, that is a form of trafficking. I think that's something that goes so easily under the radar and so like easily for people to kind of, you know, like not see, like nail bars, car washes, construction, things like that. I was once at a, sorry, I keep talking, but I was once at a...
That's the idea.
I think I was once at a women's like speaking engagement it was amazing. This woman, she got up and she goes, I was explaining about forced labor and domestic servitude. And she said, oh, so I have a cleaning company and the cleaners come with a man and he brings them to my house. This is in Kensington. And he drops the cleaners off and I don't speak to them. They don't speak English. I speak to the man. I give the man the money and then the cleaners leave. And she said, but that sounds like, you know, I thought the man was their friend or I thought the man was their employer. You know, that sounds like a form of trafficking. And I don't know actually what happened to that particular woman in that story, but I was very brave of her to stand up. But when you're in a situation like that where there is someone sort of controlling a group of people and you see it firsthand, then there's definitely a form of slavery involved in that when, you know, people don't speak English or, you know, if someone's controlling them. So it was really eye-opening for me to hear that example, you know. So it's always about opening your eyes, ask the question, you know, put yourself out there.
Yeah. So how did you come to this as a cause? Because it's something you've been working on. I mean, this is nothing new for you. This is 10 years in and you are really educated on it. I mean, when you listen to the podcast, there is no flies on you or Julia. You are all across your stats. You are sitting with lawmakers, people who work in government at the level of somebody like a former prime minister. You really hold your own and you are so beautifully equipped to hold those conversations. And I commend you both. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Well, I mean, Jules and I, my mum actually highlighted this to us. We went to Calcutta with my mum. And Jules was working for her on her charity stuff at the time. And we went to visit Aloka Mitra, who is this incredible woman who set up the Women's Interlink Foundation in Calcutta. And she rescued trafficked girls and women from the street and she put them in a home and she taught them how to print on fabrics, how to make dresses and bags and scarves and clothes and things. And all those products that these girls and women we sold them in shops like Topshop and Urban Outfitters and we partnered and every bit of money that was made went back to the girl and then the girl didn't have to turn to, you know, a terrible situation like you would be if you were vulnerable to trafficking. So it really opened our eyes to the term trafficking. And then we got back to the UK and we were like, oh, we need to learn. We need to become investigators. We need to just like educate ourselves, because you know you never want to be, you know, the person who doesn't understand quite what's going on, and you're trying to fight for something. So we went and spoke with anyone we could possibly speak to. We went to safe houses. We visited charities. We just searched around for what really we were looking into, and we realized it was modern slavery, and it's within a mile of where you live. And there are safe houses across the UK already for many, many years who have been looking after survivors of trafficking. And we went to a safe house, you know, next to Heathrow, and walked in, and there were a bunch of wonderful women. And one woman, one girl called Seema, who literally came up to us and was like, you know, I was trafficked by my next door neighbour in Manchester to a gang. And I was like, what? How do you get trafficked? How is it possible that trafficking exists in the UK and that it exists by your next door neighbour? Well, I don't really understand, you know. And she explained to me that this man, her next door neighbour, had groomed her and used her to with this gang, and that she was vulnerable and therefore couldn't ever get out of that circle. And eventually she managed to get hold of the Salvation Army, who are incredible organization fighting modern slavery. And they got her out of the of her home, and they put her in a safe house. And she now wants to, well, she is now fighting for, you know, against modern slavery. And she's also a social worker, and she's an absolute fighter. But what it caused in Jules and I was this kind of like, you know how you drive and you're like, oh, I'm complaining about the traffic, or oh gosh, it's cold, or oh no, you know, I don't know, I didn't buy any chicken for dinner tonight or something. And all these like worries and sort of nothing complaints in your head. I mean, are nothing compared to what you're standing in front of a woman who's just been trafficked, and now she's standing there saying, I'm going to go and fight this with you. Let's do it together. You're just like, what was I talking about? How incredible are you? And from that, we started the collective. And, you know, it's all about, we don't want to reinvent the wheel. We want to highlight the work that other people are doing. Our partners are incredibly important to us. You know, the Salvation Army and some of these organizations that we've been working with, like, we want people to hear about them, and to, they're the ones on the front line doing this work and making it possible for survivors to lead better lives. And, you know, that's that. And the reason, you know, we might sound all swish on a podcast is because we surround ourselves with some of the greatest experts in the field. You know, one of our trustees is Caroline Hockey, who's all she does is prosecute traffickers. And so with her guidance, you know, former Prime Minister Theresa May, all Kevin Bales, who's a professor of modern slavery, who started the Rights Lab at Nottingham University. I mean, all these people have been working to fight this terrible, terrible scourge for, you know, 30, 40 years. And they're all willing and happy to guide us where they can on, you know, we're definitely not experts. We want to just, you know, we want to shine a light on amazing work.
It's remarkable listening in on those moments, because you can hear how much respect that you accord these people. But more than that, you can hear how you've both got your notes in order and you are across everything, because you raise your game in line with them. And it really shows in the episodes that I've listened to, especially the ones where you're talking to survivors, people that have lived the most extraordinarily difficult of lives. And it's really important to tell the story in all its difficult detail, because that's how you land it. That's how you inflame a conversation to make people want to get behind your movement and affect change, right? But you do that really well. What's it like after all these years to suddenly become a storyteller rather than the story itself?
Oh gosh. Do you know what? I love talking to you right now. Like, this is really easy for me because you're doing all the work, you know?
yeah.
And like, as you say, like, when you're across your notes and you're looking at it and stuff, like, when Jules and I are doing it, you can see us. We'll be on WhatsApp constantly just going, you'll go, my go, you'll go, my go. Because at the beginning, we would be talking over each other because we're both so keen and eager and like want to know everything and want to get into it. But we'd both be going, blah, 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 blah. And then Charlie or someone from Stack would say, you know, rein it back in, girls, or the sound didn't sound quite right. So we definitely you know, learned the hard way. But the people who work at the Anti-Slavery Collective are incredible, and we have notes coming out of our ears just to make sure that we're okay. But it's so nice to be interviewed and not have to look at my notes, but to be the interviewer.
It's a lot.
And you, as you say, you really want to land it correctly. And especially with talking with survivors, you know, you have to, you know, that you never want to re-traumatize people.
No.
They've already had to speak a lot about this, you know, to be in their position means they would have had to talk to the police or tell their story or go through rigorous, you know, details about what happened to them. So, you know, whenever you're working with survivors, me and Jules look at it as like, we just wait for them to come to us, really. You know, we never want to know. We don't need to know the story. We want to just make sure that they feel happy. You know, when we go and visit safe houses, we're there to like cook dinner and play Uno, which we do, and listen to them sing or try and sing ourselves, which just never works out that well. But we're never there to sort of say, no, you need to tell me. We're always there just as like a, well done you. You know, what these people are going through most of the time is like, they're probably in court fighting against their traffickers, or they're trying to get a job, or they're trying to go through school, or, you know, they don't need, you know, me and Jules coming in saying, hey, come on, tell us more. All they need actually is someone just to play Uno with, really. And, you know, I think there's a whole nother part to the trafficking and this what we're talking about now, which is, we always say, you know, drugs can be trafficked once, but humans can be trafficked again and again and again. And I think, you know, when you meet these incredible people that have survived it, they actually, even if they don't know that, whatever the backstory is about these two people coming in, they're kind of happy to talk and to play a game and to laugh and to sit outside. I mean, we once went to visit a safe house and we just played with one of the people, survivors' children, and we were all having a laugh, and that was really it. It was just someone to listen to, really.
I think they're incredibly dignified and full of courage. And the way you help to learn their stories really, really supports that.
That's the thing. I totally agree, Kate. I mean, they need that helping hand, really. And actually, every survivor we've met is truly sensational. Like what they've gone through, and then to overcome it and to still sort of stand up is incredible.
So, if people want to understand more around the detail of how this happens and who it happens to, I really would encourage you to go and just hit the follow button on the Floodlight podcast. You've very modestly not put your name in the title, so don't search for Her Royal Highness Princess Eugenie, just search for Floodlight and you'll find it, and it will blow your mind. And you'll listen to two women really working very hard to right some incredible wrongs.
Oh, thank you, Kate. Well, I have a funny story about the first time we came up with the name, because I was like, Charlie, I think Charlie or Luke, one of these guys from Stack, like, oh, we could call it this, we could call it that. And I said, I like being a foghorn for, you know, the people, you know, who need it the most. And they were like, foghorn. I was like, yeah, you know, foghorn, you know, on the boats. They were like, that is the worst name for a podcast. You cannot call it that. Imagine people searching for foghorn. It's just so unchic. So eventually they came up with Floodlight, thank God.
It just goes to show that it's good that you're open to feedback.
Yeah, big time.
Foghorn, kind of a derisory term for a woman that likes to kind of shout a lot.
Yeah, exactly. So everyone search Floodlight, not the other one. Ignore that.
Not Foghorn.
Yeah.
How are you managing to fit all of this in with a full-time job, two very small children, and living between two countries? Because you have been living part-time in Portugal as part of your husband's work. I mean, as plates go, yours seems pretty full.
I actually don't know how I'm doing it. I think I asked my friend that the other day, who she has four kids and they all get into bed with her at night and they all want to touch her at one point in the night. I said, "How do you do it?" And she goes, "I'm so tired that if I stop, like, I'll crash. So I just stay tired the whole time." So how do I do it? I don't know. I think I have, my kids are so wonderful. I mean, Augie is a 2.5-year-old firecracker and just is listens to me, really. I don't know why. And then Ernie, you know, he just smiles the whole time. So they're really easy and wonderful boys. And then, you know, I have a really fantastic job, and I'm grateful enough now to have some time on maternity leave, and I'll go back and try and fix it all and do everything all at once. But right now I have the ability to talk to you at 3 o'clock on a Tuesday
afternoon. I was thinking, how is she doing this? You're not back at work yet. You're still on maternity leave.
Yes. Yeah.
And how are you finding, like, the night feeds, the sleepless nights, the two kids? Because I think it's really hard to understand how your heart could have the capacity to love any more when you've got one, right? And then another comes along, you're like, wow, where's all this love going to come from? But it just does, right?
Yeah, it does. And I kind of look at it as, like, I am one whole person. And then I gave half of myself to my first son, and I've given the other half to my other son. And so there's not very, like, I've given it all to them. sleep is like, I think I was born, honestly, if there was a tournament in the Olympics of sleeping, I think I would win it. I can sleep for Great Britain as a national sport. And so I think my boys have gained that talent. And so they are deep, deep sleepers and have never really...
Wow.
Yeah, they're. I hate to say that to all mums listening, but they're really, really good sleepers.
That's half the battle, because yeah. Otherwise you're just walking through life jet-lagged,
yeah,
aren't you? With that sleep 100%. Deprivation.
But then there are other things that don't go well, like feeding times are, you know, tearing my hair out type moments. But sleep is not a problem just at the moment. But there's always sleep regression and, you know, things like that coming.
But listen, I sit here today. We dialed in at 3 o'clock. At 2:30, I was saying to my son, who's on half term, "What do you mean you want to have a shower now and you've only just got up?"
Oh my gosh.
That's where it goes.
Great. Have you got two boys? One boy.
I've just got the one. He's 15. But a minute ago, I was struggling with night feeds, and it just goes so quickly. And it's almost like you grieve it now. I look back and I think, wow, oh, to hold a toddler's hand again.
It is. I know what you mean. Actually, this morning I was playing with Ernie, and I was just looking at him, chatting with, you know, his big gummy smile, because he's so little and he's so sweet. And I've forgotten what it was like to have a baby. And now I'm with him, I'm like, oh, you're so easy. You just kind of flop along with me. And I put him down in his playpen if I'm making something for him. And they just float around with you. And I was like, oh, so nice being with little people. Because I've had
he's like bouncing off the walls, climbing everything.
Yeah.
We're going to keep you fit, if nothing else. Your step count will always be in an abundance. So in order to... make this episode, I've tried to put together three, I hope, thought-provoking questions for you, because you are in that extraordinary position where everybody knows your name, but I don't think we know an enormous amount about you. So with your permission, can we dive into question number one?
Yeah, I can't remember what they are now, so this is good.
I wanted to talk to you about incredible women, because you come from a line of extraordinary women who stretch back all the way across our history books, be it your own mother, Sarah Ferguson, your grandmother, the late Queen Elizabeth, your great-grandmother, the Queen Mother, Queen Victoria, whose name you share, your sister. I mean, I could go on. So I wondered if you could share with me what you've learned from the women around you, the line from which you are from, and also the other women that have crossed your path and have maybe informed and shaped you into the woman that you are today?
Gosh.
Big one.
That is a big one.
I know.
My mum, you know, she really grounded in me this sense of giving back. It comes quite natural to want to do that because of watching her growing up. You know, she's founded a charity herself and built schools and went around the world, and we shared her with all the children we could think of that she needed to help. And so, you know, I very much grounded a lot of my, you know, giving back into what she did. And so she really, you know, her example is definitely something I live by. You know, and then the same goes really for my grandmother. You know, she was just one of the best people in the world. And, you know, she...
I think a lot of the world agree with that.
Yeah. She, her sense of duty and her dedication and her love of her people, and, you know, it really happened in public, like you all saw, and it happened in private with us. And, you know, we learned how to do things from her as well, you know, and all the, you know, how to talk to people, how to, you know, stay strong and dutiful and kind. You know, she really instilled in us a huge amount. And gosh, I'm lucky to have a bit of her, you know. When she died, I said that to people. I said, you know, God, how lucky am I to have part of her in me, you know? Oh. And then my sister, you know, she is incredible. So she just did a podcast all about, she's got dyslexia, and she's got, she worked so hard her whole life, and yet she's got dyslexia. And it is, she's just come out saying how that made her the person she is today. And I totally see that now, you know, with a lot of how we interacted and how she had schooling and everything. And she's now using that in everything she does in life. And that's just so cool that, you know, she's speaking out for that and saying that, you know, it's just a different way of thinking and different way of understanding the world. And you know, she's a great mom, and I always ring her. I ring her for nearly everything. What do I do about this? What do I do about that? Same goes for my mom, literally constant. So I think,
you've got a little WhatsApp group.
Yeah, big time. But the same goes for my girlfriends as well. Like, we've got a chicks group, we call it, and we constantly texting each other. And I think, you know, women supporting women is like the coolest thing in the world. I think in terms of who's sort of touched my life is definitely, sorry, I can hear my kid running around outside. Hang on one sec.
All right. Also, with your sister, you posted on your Instagram a moment of great pride for you. It was her speaking at a tech conference. And I don't think people, maybe people don't understand what it is that she does for a living, but she is a pretty high-flying woman in tech. And to stand up and speak to a room as she did, at a podium. I know everyone thinks that, well, that's what we do in that family. You know, it's not that, you know, if you have dyslexia, public speaking is pretty daunting. And she stood up and delivered an incredible speech. And you were so full of praise for her. You can tell you've really got each other's backs. This is a great double act.
Oh, yeah. I read a quote the other day, which could be a bit sad, but it said, it was on Time magazine, and it said, your children arrive too late and your parents leave too soon. So your siblings are really the only people that you've got everything, you know, surrounding yourself with. And I think Beatrice and I, like, our whole lives, we've realized that we've always had each other. You know, we're the only ones that are going through exactly what the other one's going through exactly that time as a girl, you know, in our family or in our place of work or whatever it is. Like, it is happening to both of us. I think that's kind of extraordinary to think about. Like, we're not twins, and I'm sure, I don't know if you have siblings, but you're not twins, but yet you go through life knowing exactly what the other one's going through. Mm-hmm. And Beatrice, you know, she's my big sissy. She's a legend. She's annoying when she wants to be, and I'm really annoying to her back, but we are, you know, we love each other, best of friends.
I think that was evident even from when you were teeny tiny. I'm sure you have no recollection of this, but the first time I met you both was with your mum backstage at the X Factor, and you were guests of the Osbournes.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
You had the best manners ever.
Did we?
I'm like, wow, they're so polite. And there's Sharon shouting at her children, effing and blind, and going, see, you need to be more like that.
Oh my God. So that is so funny, because my mum, she used to, if I was ever, you know, in a public situation, or if I had to talk to like the 98-year-old granny and I was like 4 years old, she would turn to me and she goes, I'll give you 17 bags of sweets. And then I would go over and
raised on sugar.
Yeah. I would go over and I'd say hi, or I'd be polite, or I'd take a photo or whatever. And I think mum still owes me like 150 bags of sweets, because they never actually, you know, never actually went out that way, but it was a good bargaining chip on how to get me. But I think, yeah, manners maketh man. I'm trying to do it to my kids now. And my mum's, you know, she knows every single doorman's name in London, you know, the cabbies, all those guys, like they're like her best friends. And she's always instilled in us that you know, everybody at some point is in service. So, you know, manners maketh man.
As we look back over the history books, you again, it's something that you posted on your Instagram, was you shared an image of Queen Victoria. And I thought she was quite a remarkable woman, in as much as, I mean, we've talked about your grandmother, your late grandmother, who reigned longer than any other monarch in history. But actually, Queen Victoria, she came to the throne as an 18-year-old, I mean, I'm going to say girl, because you are still a girl at 18 in my book. What an extraordinary set of circumstances to find yourself in as you literally dip your toe into adulthood.
Totally. I think, I don't know how she would have done it. Queen Victoria in our family is upheld as one of the most incredible sort of role models, because of what she did, like when she started at 18, and how she went through her entire life as queen, and she lost her husband. And we know so much about her in our family because my mum writes books and has, you know, loves Queen Victoria and Prince Albert. And she did a film about her as well.
She did, didn't she?
Yeah. What was it called? The Young Victoria. And so,
really good.
It was really good, yeah.
She knows her onions, your mum, when it comes to royal history, doesn't she? She really does her homework.
No, she's great. She knows a lot. But I mean, it's you know, she was a remarkable, remarkable woman and a remarkable monarch. And in a time when, you know, the world was massively changing, like the Industrial Revolution, and you know, Prince Albert did the what's it called, the Great Exhibition, and you know, I mean, it was such a huge changing part of England right then.
Changing landscape, changing the way that buildings were erected. I mean, so much of what they did as a couple sits around us to this day. And it's extraordinary, isn't it? Because, you know, when you look back over the history books, predominantly women have always been subservient. I'm not talking about in your family, I'm just talking about, you know, in the world in general. And in many parts of the world, that is very much still the case. But actually, when you look at your family line, it's extraordinary women leading the way. Queen Victoria, your grandmother, her mother, the Queen Mother, was never intended to be queen. This is somebody that had to pivot very quickly as a young married woman after her brother-in-law abdicated, and suddenly finds herself in the middle of the Second World War, refusing to leave as London is blitzed, trying to restore faith and belief in the need for a family like the royal family to lead us through those incredibly difficult times. I mean, extraordinary women.
Yeah, and I think also in our family, you know, when there is a leader, whether it's a male or a female, you've got the other side, the consort, you know, the doing a hell of a lot, you know, in their world to make things amazing. And I think that's what, you know, the support system around each monarch that's gone, you know, in history before has a support system. And I think, You can see that today, and you can see that now with my family and with generations past and my grandfather and the like. You know, it's very much, you know, the support system around them as well.
It's the partnership.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before we move away from the remarkable woman in your world, I also wanted to touch on the fact that you've got an aunt and a cousin who are both Olympians. I mean,
yeah,
in any family, that would be quite extraordinary. But in yours, that's like, oh, another feather in the incredible cap.
Yeah, I remember going to the Olympics to watch Zara and all the cousins. We all went and we were all sitting in the stands. Oh, my gosh. It's quite surreal. In fact, incredibly surreal.
Even for the royal family, it's got to be surreal, right?
She was incredible. I mean, I would have had such bad nerves. I probably wouldn't have done it. I mean, I don't know how to do it anyway. But you know, they are those athletes, and Zara and you know, my aunt as well. They, as an Olympian or as a sports person, I guess, you are at the top of your field in every sense. You can't really, you know, you can't really not be when you're playing for your country, or you know, it's incredible.
And it's entirely results driven, right? You either win or lose. You come first, second or third. It's you know, the metrics are applicable to everybody. It doesn't matter what your background and who you are.
Totally. It was a wonderful thing watching Zed in the Olympics. It really was. Also, by the way, the Olympics was the coolest thing ever in London.
Wasn't it,
Jess? It was just amazing.
Again, like your grandmother just completely mic dropped everybody, didn't she?
Always. That's just, you know, that's just the way it went.
The Bond. Did you know about the Bond moment, or were you as surprised as us?
Nobody knew. That's what was so incredible, was that it was all totally, nobody knew. It was amazing. We were all surprised.
Oh, I bet that was fantastic when you all got together the next time after that. And okay, hang on a minute, you told no one?
Yeah, I know.
Well, continued success with the women that you are from by way of family lines, but also the women that you choose to surround yourself with and surround your young sons with. I think it's really important.
I agree. I know that's definitely something I want to instill in them, is that their women around them are as important as mummy.
Yeah, exactly. Although right now, no one's going to be more important than mummy.
Yeah, I know.
Hold on to that while they still make eye contact and talk to you.
Oh, gosh.
It's all right. It lasts for a while. You've got years yet. You've got years.
Okay, good.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Are you ready for your next question?
Okay, go for it.
People must often be rather nervous or anxious or slightly starstruck by the thought of meeting you. But you confessed on Floodlight, your podcast, that you too are not immune to those feelings yourself. And whilst you're interviewing Dame Emma Thompson, you told her that you were really nervous about the thought of interviewing her and the reverence and the admiration that you extend to your guests, be it, you know, Theresa May or the KC that you interview, that you work alongside, who tries all of the modern day slavery cases, would suggest that sometimes you too are not immune to feeling slightly tongue-tied or starstruck or keen to impress. So I wonder, who are the people that have got you in all kinds of tangles when it comes to talking to them?
That's, I mean, nearly everybody. I get so excited. There was a film. Do you remember this film called The Truth About Cats and Dogs? Uma Thurman was in it, and then there was this guy in it, and I can't remember his name, but I saw him in a pizza place in London, and I was just like, whoa. I'd seen the film when I was young, like every week, and I ran up to him and I was like, oh my god, I'm such a big fan, oh my god, oh my god, and I totally fangirled out, and he was like, oh, thank you so much. and the same goes, oh, have you seen that TV show called Sister Sister? Do you remember that TV show? No,
that was is it an American show?
Yeah, it was on Nickelodeon, and it was like, it was that and Sabrina the Teenage Witch and Kenan and Kel, and they were our favourite TV shows. And I met one of the sister's sisters the other night, Tia. Oh my gosh, I got so overexcited.
Did you ask for a selfie?
But I was just like, oh my god. And I took a picture of it and sent it to my sister and was like, it was every 90s child's dream in front of me. So then, but they're the two that have just sprung to mind, because I obviously behaved like an idiot the other night, but anyway, I do get starstruck. Also, I think it's just more about like respect and like in my job, you know, I work with incredible artists. Even with them, I'm like, wow, you are so cool. Look at what you've just created, and can I just get to know you? And you know, tell me everything about how you did that piece of art. You know, I'm very. I think that's just who I am. I kind of.
Is that how your friendship with Tracy Emin came about, when you met her while you were working over in New York? Did you meet her through work?
Yeah, I met her. I met her through some friends actually in England. And then we both moved to New York at the same time. Uh-huh. And she became Auntie Tracy because we would hang out in New York as English people, not knowing anyone. And I think when I first met her, yeah, I mean, I'd read her in history books. I'd done history of art at school, and I'd seen, you know, everything that she did in 1997 in the Sensation, that amazing exhibition that created the YBAs, the Young British Artists. And so when you see someone in a history book and then you see them in real life, it's like, what? It's just weird. Not them as a person, but you see their art and then you learn them. And it's just, yeah.
But you do realise that most people will feel like that about you. So that you are also in the history books.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I don't, for some reason, my brain just doesn't see it like that. I love movies. I love theatre. I love books. I love art. I love all that kind of, like, I don't know if you could play Heads Up. I don't know if you've ever played Heads Up.
Yeah. You put the name of somebody in your head and then you have to guess who they are.
Exactly, yeah. And like,
oh, who you are, yeah.
Yeah, and there's like a millennials, or there's like a pop culture section, or there's like a friend section. Like, I'm always the one to like test it out, because I feel like I watch all this stuff. I know what's going on, you know?
Yeah. You're a 90s fiend, aren't you? I can tell from your Instagram feed.
Yeah, do you know what? I feel like I am, but only now am I looking back 30 years ago and I'm like, yeah, I really am a 90s child.
Of course you are. That's the era in which you were raised.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what was it like having Auntie Tracy as a friend in New York? What would an afternoon out with Auntie Tracy look like, I wonder?
Most of the time it would be going to her apartment and having dinner or chatting about her art, or we go out and have brunch in New York. She's such a lovely person, and just really kind and like wants to get to know people, and you know, I mean, she's a remarkable human as well. I think these women that we're talking about are kind of incredible. I keep saying remarkable in this podcast, but you know, really some special people out there that I'm so lucky to have known. Yeah.
Yeah, when I read that you two had become friends as kind of like, you know, English women in New York, I just had to, I don't know, I was like, oh, I wonder what that looks like, what those conversations look like. But of course, they're going to be entrenched in art, right? Because that's the shared passion for you both.
Yeah, art or friends, family, you know, we would I haven't seen her for quite a while now, but we would just hang out really and go down memory lane.
So your time in New York, was that like having a holiday from yourself in so many ways, in as much as you're in a different place where not everybody's going to know who you are, and there was almost a taste of, you know, a regular life?
Yeah, I think a lot of the motivation for me to be in New York was to see how I'd get on not being me, I guess. And actually it was the most like freeing and New York is like that anyway, you know, it's a place for people just to, you know, to be free and to where dreams come true, you know, is the New York's big city lights and everything. And I think when I went there, it was definitely a motivation was to just to feel that for a minute. And also just to test myself in terms of, you know, my work and my work ethic and who I am and what I want and what I want to do. You know, I wanted to be in the art world and New York is the center of it. And so I, you know, I think for me, it was such a special, incredible time looking back on it. I never wanted to leave really, but I think that's the joy of New York, is that you always leave on a high and then, you know, you go back and visit, but actually leaving on a high is the better thing to do, so that you have that love and appreciation for this wonderful city.
You love your work, though, you can tell just by the way you talk about it. It's obviously been a big part of your adult life.
Yeah, I have to say, art is such an incredible thing. It you know, it brings people together. It offers conversation. It starts conversation. It you know, what it does in terms of for survivors of trafficking, and how just the outlet of doing art or going to see an art show or taking part in something collectively, you know, when it's got an amazing, incredible ability to heal. And I think what we're seeing now as well in the art world is a lot of healing with, you know, what's been going on and an outlet for people to have a voice. And you know, some of these artists have really gone through the ringer, and to be able to share with the world a bit of their story is the best. I love it. It's also just going to an art gallery. I don't know, walk around the Tate for a second and look at a show. And you've got things on the wall that someone did in, you know, the 1940s when war was breaking out, and they've got this painting on the wall that's, you know, in relation to that. And you think to yourself, how did this was someone's existence. It's kind of incredible.
You can see it's what makes your blood pump. Yeah, it's a proper
definitely
passion.
Something they work hard on.
Congratulations on finding a position that makes you want to get out of bed every day. A job that makes you okay with leaving your babies.
Yeah.
Because that's a sign of success, I think, in any professional.
That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you ready for your third and final question?
I'm ready.
I wanted to dive in to your Instagram, if that's okay, because I love your Instagram. You have 1.8 million followers, and the moments that you've chosen to share on there are so beautifully telling. And they're also the snapshots, I guess, that you were happy to let the world look in on. So I wondered if we could just scroll through your grid and you could give me some of the context and the stories that sit behind some of the moments that you've chosen to share. And I wanted to kick off with, let me just say, probably the best wedding video ever. Sitting proudly at the top of your grid. What a day your wedding day was.
Oh my God. Yeah, it was insane. It was amazing. I'm just looking at my grid now. I pulled it up.
Yes. You've got it. You've got it in front of you.
I've got it now in front of me. I know that video. Oh, my videographer, Andrew Gemmel, he texts me a week before. I do my own Instagram and I find it the most stressful thing in the world.
Do you?
Yeah. Oh, God. I get so nervous. Before I post, I have to text about 5 people, ask them if it's okay. Have I got spelling mistakes? Am I going to get trolled? And with that, really? Andrew rang me the week before and was like, do you want me to put together a video for you? And I was like, yes, I don't want to have to look at, like, I don't want to, I don't know what to do. And, you know, he put it together for me and I posted it. And it's made me so happy looking at that again.
It's honestly, it's joyous. If anybody watches that and doesn't show their teeth by way of a huge smile, then they probably need to go and find some time with a doctor. It's just joyous.
Yeah, it is. And the song, that was our first dance, You've Got the Love. And it's because when we were first started dating, so Jack and I have been together 13 years, we used to sing You've Got the Love, not You've Got the Love. Anyway, nobody he knows does. That. That's a real big nugget.
You've Got the Love.
Yeah.
Oh. That's beautiful. But I love the fact that you got somebody to make your wedding video, even though your wedding was on the telly.
Oh, yeah, I know. Well, yeah. The back bits, you know, the bits when you're getting ready and all those stuff you want to remember.
Those gorgeous moments. There's also, if we just scroll further down your feed, it's a little bit way down, but there's a picture of you and it's a really candid shot. It's black and white and it's you and your husband on your wedding day, just tenderly kissing one another, having a quiet moment in the back of what looks like a glass carriage.
Yeah, I've got that up now.
How lovely is that?
I know. I've got my eyes open, which is quite funny.
Was it everything you wanted it to be, your wedding day?
Oh, it was amazing, yeah. I mean, Jack is the greatest human, and... Yeah, we just love each other. We've been together so long and it was just such a special moment. And yeah, I loved every second of it. Every second.
You can really tell. It shows.
Gosh, is it a bit sickening, all our videos and pictures we're putting up on Instagram?
No, it's not. I think it's wonderful and it's humanising and it's celebratory of... Listen, to make a success of any family in this day and age, no matter where you're from and who you are, that's winning. And you two look like you're really winning.
Oh, he's really one of the best people on the planet.
So have you ever shared an image, I couldn't find one, of the holiday on which you met in Verbier?
No, gosh, I don't think I have a picture of that. I feel like that was before iPhones existed, but no, it was...
probably was.
Yeah. That was 2011.
I mean, we're probably talking Nokia, right?
Yeah, I think so. Like Snake, you know? Yeah. No, yeah, I don't... Snake. I don't have any pictures of that. I would love to post a picture of that, but we would have been... I would have been 21 and, you know, hilarious. And yeah, but we did. We met skiing. It was... the best day, best week ever, I guess, because I met Jack.
And here he is all these years later, father of your children. Yeah, shoulder to shoulder. It's beautiful. When you launched your Instagram account, were you nervous? And what made you want to do it in the first place?
So I think, yes, I was very nervous. I'm not, I think you, as I said earlier, like, I have to ask so many people about spelling mistakes. Because I think I wrote, like, your YOUR rather than YOU apostrophe RE, you know, yeah. Like in Friends when they're like, YOUR is spelled R, you know how Ross from Friends, I don't know, I'm big Friends.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Ross from Friends, I love it. Another 90s reference. And did you have loads of Karens pile on and go, that's not how you say it? The grammar police.
Yeah, no, yeah. I had lots of people go, that's not how you say it. And I freaked out and it was just something so insignificant as that. But ever since then, I've kind of been really particular about, you know, my spelling. But also, I want to be respectful to the family I come from, and the fact that I'm I have a job as well as do my charity work. And so I've got to find a really good balance. And I also don't want to, you know, overpost my children or my family life or anything like that. So I'm constantly finding a balance. And it is really thought out in terms of, should I do this? Should I not? Is that right? Is that not? I want people to know me, because I think there's been so much misinformation, and it's so easy to judge something when you read it in the paper, or if you see a picture, like a terrifyingly ugly photo of us coming out of a bar, or, you know, the action shots that some people get. You know, it's not the nicest photos. And I have people come up to me sometimes and say, oh, you're much better looking in real life. And you're like, oh,
thanks.
Is that a compliment? I don't know.
We all get that. Oh, you're much thinner in real life. Like, yeah. Really? What do I look like on television? Jesus.
Isn't it funny? Yeah. So I do get nervous, but I wanted people to see the real me and to like know that I have a sense of humor and that I love, you know, I don't know. I take the mick out of stupid outfits we used to wear. And
okay, well, let's go to some of those, right? Because your fondness for a throwback, I love, and your witty captions. You are a very funny woman, and the joke is always on you, and I love that. But clearly your mum had a lot to answer for when it came to dressing you and your sister in.
Yeah.
I mean, there were some really quite funny matchy-matchy outfits that you...
Oh, I found the best one. The one where I'm in a lime green suit and Bitch is in a purple suit. Oh, my God, and the shoe.
You look like you're in some sort of Nickelodeon show.
Oh, it's just awful. It's just awful. I now look at that and laugh. And I showed my friend the other day and she was like, what has a 10-year-old got on her handbag? What is in your handbag? Because I think it was like a hanky and a mint or something, because my mum never let us go to church without a hanky and a mint, because we'd always often feel sick or we'd always have a runny nose or something like that.
So you were going to church dressed like that?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I thought you were like out. You've even got a casual heel.
I know. No, it's awful. But you're right. I am proud of the looks. You know, now I can look back and laugh, and you know, it's all part of life, isn't it? I mean, we Beatrice and I, like many of our cousins, have grown up, you know, in these really awkward phases, like that 10-year-old to 13-year-old phase where everything's going a bit awry. And so yeah, I'm proud of my incredibly strange outfit looks from the past, and probably my ones now.
Are you kidding me? You look great. Trust me. I've clicked on many of your posts going, and where's that dress from? And where's that one from? I think you're more than nailing it. And your sister in the style stakes. Can I move to the third but last photograph that you posted, which is of you and your grandmother. It's a previously unseen photograph of the Queen 1 year after her death. So, and in remembrance, you just put as a caption, thinking of you today, missing you so much, but remembering what a life of service, love and dedication to everyone and to your family who loved you so very much, forever grateful and always in my heart. I can't imagine that those captions are easy to write.
No, gosh, that one and the one I wrote when she died it was two of the... They aren't easy to write, obviously, and me and my sister co-wrote the one together that I posted last year, and that was, we were both crying when we wrote that. But they're also just like lovely memories. Like whenever I look at that picture now and I read that quote or what I wrote, it was like, it just brings me back to her and who she is and the love I have for her, and it just fills your heart and warms it. So it's the same goes for, like, I'm looking now and there's a picture of my sister and I for her birthday, and I just say happy birthday to my big sissy, but like, she is my big sissy, you know? So it's really true what I say, but without trying to be too much, you know?
It's never too much, but you share such beautiful detail that works as great colour and insight into the life that you've lived that we haven't always been privy to, and quite right too. You're more than entitled to have a life away from prying eyes. But for example, when you wrote about, you mean you talk about the caption that you drafted with your sister. You talk about picking heather and raspberries with your grandmother.
Yeah.
Thank you for making us laugh, you say, for including us, for marching soldiers, for our teas, our comfort, our joy, for our loving hand, for your loving hand on our backs, leading us through this world. I mean, you write so beautifully, Eugenie, you really do.
Oh, thank you. I mean every word, and all of those are our memories that Beatrice and I, when we were writing it, started laughing about and enjoying and remembering, and then I would, you know, I'll cut it to make it fit for public consumption, because not everybody, I don't want everybody to know every single thing, but they can have a, hopefully everyone sees the grandmother that she was, and she was everybody's, I felt like she was everybody's family, and then you remember that she's actually yours as well, and you're like, oh wow. And then it means even
more. And
both
is true, right?
Yeah.
Both is true.
She was. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah.
It was very poignantly and thoughtfully done. I wanted then to move to Mother's Day, because for the last couple of years, your Mother's Day posts have been, you know, double-pronged, in as much as you're acknowledging yourself as a mother as well as your own mother. And there's a lovely picture of you as a, I mean, tiny baby with your very glamorous mum. And she's wearing this kind of, it looks really 80s. Do you know the one I mean? The pink jacket.
Oh, yeah, this pink, the pink and white.
And then there's you as a mother yourself. And it's extraordinary, isn't it, how we start to view our parents differently. And so I think certainly, I can only speak as a mother myself, but I now look back at everything my mum did and went through and experienced, and it reframes your relationship and your history, doesn't it? How was that the case for you with your own mum and your relationship with being somebody's mum?
Yeah, I think everyone said that to me before I had children, that, oh my God, it will totally change your relationship with your mum. You'll have so much more respect and understanding and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Actually, it did. Like, it didn't really. I have so much respect and admiration for my mum that I kind of apologized to her for being an idiot when I was, you know, 2 and a half and charging headfirst downstairs or eating dirt off the floor or having to change my nappies or constantly holding, you know, I obviously all that is something new, and you realize what your mum did for you. But I think, It has brought us much, much more into a whole different realm of conversation, because now not only am I ringing her for advice about stuff, I'm also ringing and saying, oh, what do I do about this? Augie's doing this or Ernie's doing that. And it's a whole other aspect of our relationship, which is like, oh, did I do that? Yeah, you did that all the time. I remember this. I remember that. You know, it's everything's a phase, you know. That I definitely didn't realize as well. She was like, no, everything's a phase. They'll grow out of it. This, you know. So I think all of a sudden you have an encyclopedia, a walking encyclopedia, who can help you, you know, and obviously she does it in her way, I do it in mine. But it's so nice to know that you're not the only one out there and that I went through it too, or you know what I mean? Like, mums, I think they suffer in silence, and you're not meant to say how difficult it is to do X or Y, or, you know, you're meant to love every second of it, and if you don't, you know, people might frown upon it or not sort of or judge you for it. But actually, I think mums to come together and be able to say, like, oh, I really don't like this part of mothering, or oh, I find this bit really difficult, or
I can't watch Fireman Sam again, I really do not love Peppa Pig,
yeah, or something like that anything stuff. Like that, it's just like, it's so nice. Like, I never really heard that before I had kids, and now I've had them, it's like I've got this amazing group of friends who've all got kids the same age, and half of them agree with me on, you know, feeding time. Feeding time is just awful. It's awful. Yeah. It never goes well.
It's the witching hour. It's straight after dinner before bath time as well. That's always when they go absolutely la-la. And that's when you're at your most fried. They're at their most fractious. Yeah, I remember that.
Also, I don't know about you, but when I leave them for a couple of hours, time goes really quickly. Mm-hmm. But if I think about them when I'm not with them, I think that time for them must go so slowly because, you know, like nap time is my favorite time because they go to sleep, obviously, and it's quiet in the house for 2 hours or whatever. And in those 2 hours, like I clock watch, you know, I get my stuff done. I get so much done in 2 hours. But if I'm out and I'm having lunch or something, those 2 hours go in about 3 seconds and I'm like, damn it.
Exactly that. Exactly that. How's your mum in comparison as a grandmother versus being your mother? Because for my mum was quite strict growing up. And the moment she became a grandmother, all bets were off. You know, it's like, what do you mean they can't have that? Of course they can have that. I mean, just total overload of love and indulgence.
Well, my mum is, I think she's quite consistent actually with us and with our boys, my boys now and Beatrice's children. But I know when I go to Granny's house that it's, or Gigi's house, we call her Gigi, that she, that sugar is always on the table and that toys are always on the table and madness is always on the table. And I think they really need that. Like at our house, you know, when you it's routine and you get stuck into it and there's no cookies at 5 p.m. or whatever. And in their house, it's like, woo, let's just kind of go mad. And yeah. I think children need that. Otherwise it would be, I don't know, they need that sort of existence. Mum and I always had, growing up, we had table manners A and table manners Z or Z. And, you know, she would say table manners Z now. And like, we'd all put our feet on the table. Obviously we didn't do that, but you know, we'd eat chips with our hands or whatever and ketchup coming out of our ears. And then table manners A was, you know, don't get anything on your pretty white dress and eat with a knife and fork. And I think because there were those boundaries in place, me and my sister could really bounce within them. And yeah. I feel the same with the boys and stuff. Like, you know, Augie the other day, he threw a stick of an ice lolly into the middle of the room because he'd finished. And I was like, no. Pick it up, put it in the bin, and he didn't want to, but I know he likes putting things in the bin, so I was like, no, come on. And I started this fight and I thought, oh god, now it's going to take forever. And it took about 20 minutes, but he put it in the bin eventually because I explained it to him. But it's just one of those things that, like, if he knows my boundaries are like, no, just put your things in the bin, don't throw it at people, then they can behave like they want in a weird way, you know, just live within the boundaries.
Yeah, I think you're in the tough years because you've really got to just keep reinstating the same messages over and over again. But it does pay dividends in the end because they do ultimately listen. And look, you guys worked out brilliantly. So, you know, there's got to be something in it. How was it breaking the news to your eldest that there was a youngest on the way? Because that's another beautiful shot that you shared on Instagram, the fact that you were about to become parents for the second time.
I think, weirdly, because your tummy just grows and grows gradually, I don't think he really, it wasn't like obviously it's not a drastic change overnight. It's slowly and surely your tummy gets bigger. And then by the end, you know, I couldn't pick him up. I couldn't bend over. I couldn't put his shoes on, all this kind of stuff. And so he sees mummy changing. And then when little baby Ernie came, I think Augie, you know, he, like any new thing, I think for me, my brain took a tailspin, and the same goes for my little son. You know, he was like, what is this new thing? And actually now, like the other day, where were we? I think it was to his little cousin, Sienna. He goes, that's my baby brother. And I was so proud. I was just like, oh my God, he's like introducing him. And like, he just came, that's my, you know, oh, and I was just, proud as punch.
Eugenie, thank you so much for your time today. And thank you for shining a light on a cause that otherwise sits way too far on anybody's radar. It's really important. And if you're a fan of White Wine Question Time, that means that you're a fan of great storytelling, which means that you're going to love the work that Eugenie and Julia do in telling really important stories. So please do, whatever you do, hit that follow button, hit subscribe, and see what I mean.
Oh, thank you for having me.
You've been an absolute joy and a pleasure. I've enjoyed every minute, every moment, every exchange. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much.
my enormous thanks to Her Royal Highness Princess Eugenie. You can hear more about her incredible work with the Anti-Slavery Collective by listening to her podcast Floodlight wherever you get your podcasts. And for more information about modern day slavery and how you can become part of the solution, visit www.theantislaverycollective.org. And if you're in the mood for more thought-provoking conversation, why not head over to our back catalogue, where you'll find almost 300 episodes featuring the likes of Hannah Waddingham, Alistair Campbell, Luke Evans, Chris Packham, Dame Prue Leith, Sir Tony Robinson, Tom Kerridge, Richard and Judy, Emma Barnett, and so many more. I'll be back on your feeds on Tuesday with another special episode as we mark Menopause Awareness Month. Until then, thanks so much for your company.
White Wine Question Time is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.